welcome to Vacation Station, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Travel writer and author Linda Ballou is back on Big Blend Radio today, and she's going to share some of her recent adventures down under with overseas adventure travel, and that took her from Melbourne to Sydney and included Alice Springs, a place called Uluru. She's going to have to tell us if that's how you pronounce it. And also she went to the Daintree Forest, a place of, you know, Nancy and I, we've talked about that, wanting to go there for years. It's the oldest tropical forest on the planet. And she also went to the threatened Great Barrier Reef. But today we're going to focus on Melbourne, Alice Springs, Uluru. And we're going to talk about more Australia down the road here with her, too. So this is just the beginning. And as you know, Linda has been on Big Blend Times, and she's one of our expert contributors in Parks and Travel magazine, as well as Big Blend Radio and TV magazine. She's also the author of a number of books, and her most recent one is Lost Angel in Paradise, Outdoor Days from L.A. to the Lost Coast of California. We've talked about a number of her books. She's been all over the world. And very excited to talk about Australia today. I encourage you to go to her website, lostangeladventures.com, as well as lindabalooauthor.com. So welcome back home, Linda. How are you doing?
Hi, Lisa. I'm really glad to be home, actually. You know, one thing about travel, it makes me appreciate where I live even more. Even though, you know, the places I go, and especially Australia, is a fascinating place. There's no place like home.
Yeah, I think it was Nancy and I being on the road full time. We're actually in your beautiful Golden State today. Today we're right outside Joshua Tree National Park.
And, oh, that's the place I've wanted to go.
Well, come on out. We'll go rock climbing. Have you done rock climbing before?
No, but I know Joshua Tree is supposed to be really an interesting place, and you know, it's the old, don't see it as well as someone who is visiting. Yeah. But I'm going to get there.
Well, if you come out while we're here, that'd be awesome. Nancy and I are not going to be doing any rock climbing. What we will be doing is taking some hikes and photographing everybody else getting up there and doing that. Because Nancy, would you rock climb? I think you would, huh?
I've been there, done that.
Oh, well, excuse me.
No, just, you know, I don't know. I think I like to watch other people now.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I really like to go more into the wilderness areas and watch the animals and the birds and such rather than that now.
Yeah. There's a thing.
Now, well, it's all good.
It seems like, Linda, you had a really good nature experience. You had a cultural experience. You had a food experience.
I did.
Melbourne.
Let's start there. Let's start in Melbourne because that's where the trip started. And first, let me say that I did not experience any smoke. My friends were saying, don't go. And I said, look, you know, this is a trip of a lifetime. I'm going. And Melbourne was the first stop, which is on the south part of Australia. And there wasn't any smoke in Melbourne, fortunately, luckily, because there were some fires in Victoria. But it's a wonderful town. It's, you know, so pedestrian friendly. And we stayed right in the center of the city. And there's a free tram that goes around the center of the town. And you can hop on and hop off at all the different sites, the museums, the state library has exhibits, art galleries, all of it is, you know, really easy and fun to get to. Mm-hmm. And you have buskers, you know, free entertainment, young people out there playing and singing and performing. And, you know, it's just a wonderful, fun town. Plus, there are a lot of green spaces, which I really appreciated. Mm. And one of the things that I really enjoyed was the Royal Botanic Garden. And it was, it's about 10 acres, but it's not real structured. It was like, you know, like a forest with meadows and beautiful trees, huge trees, and there was a lagoon and lots of very family friendly with people, you know, picnicking. And we had a guide who was a young Aboriginal man who gave a smoke ceremony for us. It was a welcoming ceremony that the Aboriginal people do. And it enjoins you to, you know, respect their culture. And he talked to us about, you know, the elders are protective, are to protect, and the young are to provide, you know, and he sort of explained things about their culture. And by the way, there are 250 different tribes.
Wow, that's a lot.
You know, see, everybody has an image of the Aboriginal people that are generally in the outback, the ones that are painted with lots of dots and dancing and are nomadic. And they were nomadic because they had to move around to get game. But these people lived on the Yarra River, so they didn't have to move around. They had everything they needed. They had, you know, plenty of game and water, and they didn't need to roam around. So I learned a lot about the differences in the Aboriginal tribes. And they all had 250 different languages. So, you know, there were a lot of
You know, Linda, going back to so many tribes, and, you know, when you think about the Aboriginal tribes, that's something that we may not think about here in the States. We've got our Native American tribes. I know Nancy and you've been to Africa too. There's different tribes, but a lot of times we'll just go, okay, you know, these are Aboriginal people. You know, that's not
right.
Really true. You know?
That's right. And that's what I learned. It's really not the same at all. I mean, we people, human beings, are a reflection of our environment, wherever we live. So, you know, people who lived in the outback, which was very dry, very desert-like, you know, they learned other ways to survive. In the Yarra River, they didn't have to work so hard. And they weren't nomadic. So the city Melbourne, one of the fascinating things about it is they have these murals all over. And I was very impressed with some of these murals. Some of them are commissioned by the government and done by professional artists. And some of them are just people who, you know, their lanes, they call them, are covered with these murals. And some of them are really quite fantastic. There's one image that I shared with you of the blue woman, the face of the blue woman. And that was to do with the fires. On the right-hand side is the fire gas mask, someone wearing a gas mask. And then the other side is the little koala. And then she is like the intermediary, you know, the people trying to save the animals from the fires. So the fires were going on when I was there. And the Australian people really have been suffering in New South Wales. And I'm not trying to minimize how dreadful that was. But I want people to know that, you know, Australia is as big as the United States, huge geographic territories, huge, you know, huge land of extremes, you know, many different microclimates. And so I'm not saying that New South Wales and the bushfires were not horrific. I'm just saying that there's a lot of Australia that wasn't impacted and is still, you know, really quite wonderful and beautiful to see.
I think that's really important. I'm really glad you went there because I know Nancy and I and you, all of us having lived in California, have been through numbers of wildfires, you know, and, you know, having been evacuated a gazillion times in life, you know, there's this thing when you hear that everybody thinks, oh, all of California is down. It's, you know, don't go there. Don't do this. Don't do that. And it's far from the truth half of the time. And and we have to look at the geography. So I'm really glad you bring that up because I think, and it's a lot of times you don't want to be in the way, right? There's going on, there's a hurricane going on over here or where you don't want to be in the way. So it's important when travelers and travel writers go overseas or into any area, it doesn't matter where it is in the world, that we find out, okay, this part's okay, this part isn't. And it is in these places to help them get their economy back when something like
well,
this
that's
happens.
For sure. That's for sure. It definitely has hurt their tourism industry, which is huge there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wanted to be clear on that. So the other thing that was really fun there in Melbourne that I loved was in these lanes, they shut off the traffic, the automobile traffic. and they have just all these different eateries. It's very multicultural, so there's every kind of food that you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had just an absolutely diabolically rich seafood pasta that I just loved, you know, with really fresh seafood. And, you know, it was just fun. It was outdoors, you know, it wasn't hot. It was like in the 70s in Melbourne, very comfortable. And it stays light in the summer. I was there in the summer, January. And it stays light till like 8:30, 9 o'clock. So you eat outdoors, and you know all different eateries all over the town, and it's really a nice town. I really enjoyed
it. I've heard
it.
That it's really international, like when it comes to
right.
people living there, and then that means the food's really amazing because of that.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, Middle Eastern. You have a lot of Asian, and
cool.
You know, have German, and you know It's all of it. Whatever you want, it's there. Nice. And then, of course, the river walk at night is where the nightclubs are and many different eateries. And a fun thing to do is take a 2-hour boat ride up the river to the Botanical Garden. That's a really nice day.
I like that because
yeah.
they're looking at sustainability as well. I want to kind of go back a little bit here because what's interesting, you're talking about, you know, being in Melbourne in the city. But you also did this through Overseas Adventure Travel. So this is like a guide company. So, I mean, did you work with them in regards to, was it a group trip? And if so, how many people?
Yeah, it was a group. Yeah, we had about 14 people in our group.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and they were all adult, very mature world traveler types who, many of them had done other trips with Oats because Oats trips all over the world. And they're very organized, and you get a lot of bang for your buck with them. And as I say, they do a lot of what they call learning and discovery, so that you are experiencing things that are, you know, not typical for the average tourist.
Mm.
So we did go to an animal sanctuary there, for instance, while we were in Melbourne. We went outside of the city to the sanctuary, which was really nice because, you know, wildlife isn't really terribly cooperative. But we were able to get up close and personal to the little wallabies and able to hand feed them and, you know, see the koalas, you know, who are not terribly friendly. They look cuddly, but they're not. The wallabies are much friendlier. But it was nice to be able to see the wombats. You know, these were different creatures that we're not
cool.
used to seeing. So that was a good thing. But so that's the other nice thing about this company. I had a free day in Melbourne, and then when we get to Sydney, I had a free day there. And we have lots of free time, which really appeals to me. And when I got to Melbourne, I had to get to the Great Ocean Road, which was only 2 hours south of Melbourne, outside of Melbourne. So I booked with a different company, Autotopia. There are half a dozen different companies that do the Great Ocean Road, but this company does it in reverse so that you're starting at the end of where most tour buses go. So you hit it before the tourists get there, right? So you're early to the Apostles, which is the main attraction. And then you work your way back down this stunning coast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very full day. I had to get up early for it and come home late, but I'll tell you, it was so worth it.
And the
wonderful.
Coast looks like, Nancy, isn't it the Bay of Fundy that you were talking about?
Yeah.
Apollo Bay is one of the coastal towns there. It's very charming and sweet. But the Apostles are a very dramatic coastline, stunning like Big Sur, very dramatic. You know, you don't live on it, but they have these sea stacks that are made of sandstone. And it's called the Shipwreck Coast because it's coming up from the Antarctic, the ocean. And it's the South Sea, and it's like the scene of many, many, many shipwrecks over the years because they're quite rough. In the summer, when I was there, it wasn't terribly rough. But apparently, it gets quite, you know, challenging. And but it's very scenic. And then the other thing that's on that coastal road that I didn't realize is the Otway National Park, which is a temperate rainforest. Surprise, I certainly didn't expect to run into that on that day. And we did a mile loop in the forest, which was really lovely and a very nice surprise. And, I just find it to be, you know, it's so varied. The country is so rich and varied in the different environments. And I love it because it's not crowded. I mean, they're not that, you know, most of the people live in the cities like Sydney is, you know, crowded. I mean, a lot of people, right? But most of the countryside is not, you know, and
right.
we had our road, this beautiful road, mostly to ourselves because we were going reverse of, you know, the tour buses.
That's really smart, and I think that's where the benefit of having the right tour company really helps.
Right.
One of the things that you talked about quite a bit in an article is about, you talk about these ghost trees and the ghost
gums. Yeah, well, that now we're from Melbourne. We have Alice Springs, which is in the center of the red center of Australia, and geographically it is literally in the center of the continent. You know, so this is a big red dot, Alice Springs, and it basically it's like Palm Springs in the middle of nowhere. It's a desert town. It's really kind of sweet. It's not huge. I think there's like maybe 25,000 mm-hmm. people who live here. But the ghost gum trees were they're white. They have a white trunk. And they're kind of like eucalyptus, but more like sycamores in my mind. Because of the white trunks, and they were about that size. And they were made famous by this artist, Albert Namatjira. And he was an Aboriginal man who lived in this area, and he was the first Aboriginal to paint what's called the McDonald Range, which is, you know, where Alice Springs frames Alice Springs. And he colored, you know, you could see the blue mountains and these gum trees and the billabongs, and he made this landscape absolutely famous, and he became famous, and he became rich. And he became, known all over the world. And he, in 1957, they made him the first Aboriginal man to have the right to buy property. Before
wow.
him, they couldn't buy property. They could drink, they could buy alcohol. Before that, it was illegal for Aboriginals to buy alcohol. And there's
That's
even some
not
laws
right.
against it. Well, there's even some laws against it today. So anyhow, he was
wow.
the first Aboriginal man who was given rights, who was not considered fauna, you know, just an animal, a savage. And, you know, there was a referendum. The Australian people, you know, knew that wasn't right, too, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they wanted this to happen, but it didn't happen. Until this man came along and did what he did.
Kind of pushed the envelope through his art. It's interesting how the arts always kind of
mm-hmm.
make a change. You know, and it's interesting when you're going to Alice Springs and then you went to an area at Uluru.
All right, Uluru. Okay, all right. You know Uluru by the name of Ayers Rock. Now, you've heard of Ayers Rock, probably. It's the huge red monolith that you've seen that is... You know, iconic Australian pictures. I'm sure you have seen
mm-hmm.
pictures of the rock. And Uluru means beautiful in the Anjanu language. And the Anjanu tribe in 1996, I think it was, they were given back the management of that land. And it's a national park now,
awesome.
Well-visited national park. And well respected, and the Anjanu people lived around the rock. You from the distance, Uluru looks like just a big red lump out there, imposing thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you get up close to it, it's you have trails that are around it, and there are trees, the ghost gum trees, and there's willows, and there's of water, there's little billabongs, you know, seeps that are in the rocks that collect the water. And this is where the people lived. And they had, there were rock paintings from 10,000 years on the caves that we were in. And there was the woman's cave, which was quite cool and comfortable, where they did the cooking and took care of the kids.
Wow.
And it was important because it gets to be 100 degrees there a lot often.
Yeah.
You know, it's a desert. And then there was a man's cave where they made the spears and hunted and so on, you know. So this is where they live. People now have a community in the park. They don't live at the rock anymore, but it is, you know, they have a cultural center there. And all the proceeds go to the tribe. So, you know, there has been attempts towards reconciliation towards the Aboriginal people by the Australian people. You know, by and large, the Australian people are really nice people. But, you know, sometimes governments make rules that we don't like.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, look at the history of America, look at the history of Africa,
right.
India, Australia, I mean, all of them,
right.
You know, it's
right.
You know, history. I think that's the importance of travel. You realize that you may be getting mad at your own country or not, you know, and you travel somewhere else and you'll find like, wait, they have the same thing. So, you know, we're all dealing with the similar issues in some ways. And it's interesting because you look at America with the Navajo lands and places like Monument Valley being
right.
Navajo tribal park. And then look in Kenya, Nancy with the Maasai lived in Maasai Mara too,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's
right.
the tribal connection. And then you go to some place like Point Reyes National Seashore and you have farmers living amongst national parkland. So there's this thing where you can't just throw out what it was. You have to work together to find that balance. And I think travel really does
right.
that, you know.
In terms of the way tribes have been treated around the world, I mean, the Aboriginal
yeah.
people were treated hideously, but I have
yeah.
to say our Native American people were also treated.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
Very poorly.
Across the board, when the British,
you know, there
to...
were massacres and, you know, terrible things that the soldiers did, you know, I mean, we won't go there, but the fact is that we're no better. And it's, you know, modern people are trying to reconcile it
yeah.
all over the world, I
yeah.
think.
Well, like Nancy, you were saying earlier too, I mean, over Kenya, that was pretty bad. South Africa was we lived through that in apartheid.
Yeah, apartheid, my goodness. Yeah.
You know? So all those places have that, and it's, but it is about now and what can we do as individuals too, and as travelers, being aware of
right.
it. You know, I did want to go back to going out to these, you know, these areas like you talk about Alice Springs, you know, being like the red center of Australia, and you're looking at also Uluru, you know, these high desert areas, and I know you've traveled through like Sedona and you've you know been all over the world too, and it's like those desert areas, there's something spiritual, there's special. Did you find a commonality?
Okay,
you know,
yeah, there's a magic
from the
in the desert. there is a magic in the desert, isn't there? There's something about the desert night skies, right?
Yeah.
Now there's a man, Monroe, Bruce Monroe, who's an artist who has done Field of Light, and he did one in Paso Robles, California, and I know he's done others. He's an Englishman, but 30 years ago he was at Uluru and he got intoxicated by the desert, the magic of Uluru. It's a spiritual site. All right. So 30 years later, I was lucky to be there because he created an exhibition of lights, a field of lights, right? I think like 50,000 lights. And you walk through these pathways at night. And I found a seat in the middle of the field of lights. I was by myself because I wanted
nice.
To be. And, you know, I could see the dome of this dazzling night sky, unbelievable, you know, and it was like I was in the center of the universe, and it was very, very, very moving. I mean, I was really touched by being there and the experience of it, and so, yeah, there's something to do. There's something about the desert. Okay, it's very hot in the daytime. If I lived there, I'd have to become nocturnal, but that's what the animals are. The animals are nocturnal. You know, and why? Because it's by you know in the dusk it becomes comfortable and very night. And at night, you know, it's totally black velvet sky with these you know wonderful diamonds in the sky. It's just beautiful. So the desert has flowers, of course, in the spring, which I didn't see. I was there in the summer. But the other thing about Uluru, rains, because there are these gashes in the rocks that have been created by waterfalls. But of course, it's only happening when it's raining. But there is a, it's a Uluru in rain. It's quite pretty to look at.
So does it have it, do they have it as a monsoon or is it like a winter storm that they get?
I'm not sure, you know, how much rain they get and how wild it is, but in this video on YouTube, it looks, it just looks like, you know, like a spring rain, but it's creating waterfalls.
Nice.
It's really cool. I recommend
a peek. That's the thing with the deserts. Like, people forget there's this other life force, even if it's not strong. You know, even here where we are right now in Joshua Tree, you can see the beginnings of spring. Some areas are going to have it really magical. Some places aren't. But that one bit of rain, it's like the desert doesn't waste.
It brings the whole place alive, right.
It doesn't. Now, Nancy, one of her things that she wanted to comment was the birds, right, Nancy? That was a thing to figure
birds.
Out. Like, you had a bunch of birds that you got to see. Was it more in the Melbourne area that you got to see?
No, I saw birds actually in the Royal Botanical Park in Sydney. There were ibis, a lot of ibis, just walking around. They're big birds with a big curved beak and quite impressive. They had a lagoon in that park. Mm-hmm. A lot of birds around the Sydney area. Yeah, but I didn't, not so much in Melbourne. I didn't see so much in Melbourne. And the birds that I saw in the desert, though, were like, at the hotel we were staying, they were like, I don't know, a billion cockatoos, it sounded like it. They make quite a racket. I would say there are at least 200 or 300 cockatoos zooming around the pool area.
Oh my gosh. So these cockatoos and they're all white?
Yeah, cockatoo, white cockatoos, and some of them are
the smaller ones.
Some of them have pink cheeks and they're roseate cockatoos. And there were a lot of birds outside my hotel room. I had a tree right by my hotel when I had beautiful sunrises there. That's the other thing about the desert is the sunrises and the sunsets are spectacular. So, I saw a lot of birds in Alice Springs because we had water and there wasn't a lot of it. So there were, and I saw a lot of kangaroos in that area too.
Oh.
We went to one of the local people did a barbecue for us in his kind of farm. And he had a huge, huge tract of land that he owned. And on the way, you know, I think we must have seen a dozen kangaroos hopping.
I want to see kangaroos in the wild. Was this your first time to Australia?
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
I've been working myself up to this trip for a long time. It's a very big trip. It's a very long flight. And just before I came on the phone to talk to you, I was reading about New Zealand Air is going to come out with a sleep room for economy. Now I'm wondering how expensive that's going to be.
These big epic trips are worth it because, I mean,
God,
you can sleep later. You know, there's that saying, I'm going to sleep when I'm dead. I mean, really, it's like, you know, I know we need sleep, but this kind of thing is epic. So everyone, we're going to be chatting with Linda again on the next part of her journey. And
right.
You can actually go to nationalparktraveling.com and see Linda up there in our expert department. And we have a nice puzzle up there that you can do, a jigsaw puzzle. And you can see some photos from her trip and also a link over to the article she has. And also, I want to give a shout out to your travel company that you went through, Overseas Adventure Travel. You can go to their website. It's OAT, like oats, your morning oats, OAT, travel.com. Check them out because I think, you know, if you want a really good, authentic experience, it really does actually help to go with a really good guide company. I know that, you know, Nancy and I know it's like going to a national park, and if a national park ranger takes you around and shows you just a few things, even on an hour walk, your visit has been heightened by gazillion, you know, just a huge mm-hmm. amount of time, because you really start to understand where you are. So really mm-hmm. encourage you to do those kind of companies if you can. Also, Linda's latest book is Lost Angel in Paradise, Outdoor Days from L.A. to the Lost Coast of California. You can go to lostangeladventures.com and also lindabalooauthor.com for the rest of her books. And we want to thank you all for joining us, and thank you, Linda. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Of course, Linda, we always like to play music for you, so we had to go to the Walkabout Band, you know, because they're partway mm-hmm. between Sydney and New York. It's, you know, it's a dual country band, and, you know, they like walkabouts, and I know you like walkabouts, and this song is called Oasis. It is from their album Things Are Looking Up, because it truly looked like you had a little bit of an oasis where you were. No matter where you were, even in the desert, you still had water out there that you guys got to go swimming in and stuff. So
yes, we did.
Oasis, everyone. Thanks so much, Linda. Oh,
thank you, Lisa.
Smile until the sunrise.